Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up the world, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Get a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when live and on the air.
Good morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis. I'm your host. This is MJ Network. MJ Network, after my sister Marsha Joyce that I miss terribly. And it's beautiful outside. It's just freezing, but the sun is shining, and this is going to be very interesting. The next time you move, I would suggest that you check out where you're going to move and the neighbors before you get there. In a world where technology changes every minute and curiosity can get the better of people, there's a neighborhood filled with busybodies, nosy people, and gossip that fills their days, as most of these people don't work, create their own rules, codes of dress for events, and demanding strict guidelines for dealing with other neighbors, even parties, and how to decorate your home and even unpack your boxes. How would you feel if somebody came to your door and said, this is where you're going to put everything? Welcome to the neighborhood. Think twice before you move this into this one. And author Bridget Ring is here, and she's going to tell us more. Good morning. How you doing? And welcome to MJ Network.
Oh, thank you, Fran, for having me on today. I'm really excited to talk to you about the neighborhood. It's been an adventure since this book has been published. Lots of feedback, for sure.
Well, you got positive feedback, I'm sure. And the minute I posted the review, a lot of people read it. So there's a lot of people out there.
Oh,
so when creating the setting, how did you decide on the location for each house, and why did you model it after Robin Hood characters? That I found hilarious.
Oh, my gosh. Isn't it just charming? Sherwood Forest, and then
yeah.
You have the streets, Robin Hood Boulevard, Maid Marian, Friar Tuck, the Richard Road, and Little John Way. I actually lived in Sherwood Forest in Indiana many years ago, and I thought it was so charming just to drive around the area. And when I came upon the idea of writing about a neighborhood, I immediately told myself Sherwood Forest. It would have to be in Sherwood Forest. But it was a process. I actually was in the post office overhearing two people talk about what was happening in their neighborhood. And Fran, do you know what I found out? These people were talking that there were certain rules that were made. People had to do certain things, or they were going to try to get people to leave their neighborhood. And I left the post office thinking, well, how would you do that? And I was wondering, I knew what kind of neighborhood I lived in, and my neighborhood's not like this at all. So you know what I did? I did a survey with friends and family all over the United States, different social economic classes. I sent out 100 surveys, and I gave them 20 questions, and I told them, please answer the top 10 type of people that live in your neighborhood. And when I started getting the survey back, I was surprised. Everyone has the same kind of people in their neighborhood. It was hilarious. I thought, this is really interesting. So from then, I decided I was going to use the top 10, and I was going to use these people in my neighborhood that I was going to write about. So I felt that would connect people, because it was a really true, this is what type of people live in the neighborhood. I didn't want to expose my neighborhood. I would never do that. But isn't that an interesting way to start the idea and the process of a book?
That's interesting that people sent you answers. In my neighborhood where I grew up in the South Bronx, so we didn't have that. We just had my whole family in the building. And my parents and everybody else made the rules, so it didn't matter. There was no neighborhood. There was just nothing. And then when we moved, my mother had a whole bunch of friends over there, but it wasn't quite like that. So Gretchen and Jared decide to move there. Why did they decide to move there?
So Gretchen and Jared, first of all, were getting ready to retire. Their children were raised, and they were looking for the idyllic place to settle down and eventually retire. So Jared was basically moving out of his career. Gretchen was just going to be at home. Her daughter lived close enough that they could travel and see one another. So anyway, she was seeking out a place for them to retire. And this street just looked so idyllic. And isn't that interesting? When you looks can be deceiving, and that's what we found out. You'll find out in the neighborhood that you just really don't know until you're actually in what the people are actually like. And you were asking about the houses. Well, it was a cul-de-sac, and the homes were, in my book, there are three different types of homes, double, two stories, there's a tri-level, and then there's a single story. But each one of the homes were reflective of one another. The kitchens were designed the same. The living rooms were in the back of the house, or the family room was in the front of the house. And there's a basement where people did things. So I wanted to make things similar for when the neighborhood, or when Gretchen meets Maggie. Maggie arrived the first day that Gretchen was going to unpack her house. And boy, she walked past Gretchen and started unpacking her boxes. And that completely blew Gretchen away. She didn't know how to behave with her. She thought, oh my gosh. And so she shooed her out of the house. And so a lot of people were asking me, was Gretchen vocal enough? I think when you move in a neighborhood like this, where the people get to know one another and they want to know about one another, you kind of have to, you either tell them everything or you keep some things to yourself. And Gretchen kind of was in the middle. She would say things, observe things, and she wouldn't talk about what was going on, whereas she found out the other neighbors were talking nonstop about what was happening in the neighborhood.
Well, I'll tell you, I would make up something. I would make up something and come up with something that they were like, are you serious? You really did that? Oh, of course. It's scary.
Well, even in the beginning you would do that? Oh.
I'm very careful, yeah. I wouldn't tell anybody too much. I might, you know, like somebody walked in like Maggie did to my house, I might have said, you know, I'm going to call 911 if you don't leave. Who are you? I mean, she didn't exactly introduce herself. She just said she barged in on her. So
she just barged right in.
Yeah, we get to know, and she wanted to, actually, I might have needed her to help me straighten out my closet, so that would be really good, but only if I asked her to. That would be nice. So
oh, yes,
we have some strange people in this neighborhood. So tell us about Maggie and Chet. And money was no object, and they didn't have to work. And when I find out what they really did, it's like, really, they're scary.
Yes. So it's interesting. When you live in a neighborhood, you do know things about people, but sometimes you really don't know the true fact of the matter. And what makes them tick. And in Maggie and Chet's case, they had everything. They made sure they dressed to the nines. They had the jewelry. They had the cars. They put in special everything because they wanted everybody to think money was no object. Well, there's a twist to that story that I don't really want to divulge at this point.
Nope.
But you're driven by what the heck Maggie is doing, and you find out later that Maggie was a little queen. She always was in these shows. She wore tiaras, and she just thought she was very important, and things matter. So I took the idea of a family that money was no object, and I took the, I wanted you to get to know these people. I want you to know what makes them tick, and there'll be a tea party later in the book, and you really find out from Maggie the heart of why she needs to have this attention. But it's very interesting. There's so much more to people as you get to know them, and you do need to talk back and forth. So Gretchen was kind of like a voice of reason in the story, and the neighbors immediately felt attracted to her. They felt that they could give her, tell her all their deepest secrets. Dorothy had the husband Riley, and he was a hunter, and there's funny stories about him in the book. But she divulged, Dorothy would just divulge her heart to Gretchen, and it's interesting, all the neighbors felt that they could trust her. So, and then as we get going in the book, and you're finding out about each of the neighbors, you find out, wow, do they really like one another? So that becomes another topic that the reader is thinking while they're reading the story. I have you coming up with your own idea about how they're talking to one another, what's being said, how they're reacting. And people are telling me how they would react. And the first thing out of their mouth usually is, oh, my gosh, this was so funny. I would never want to live in that neighborhood, though. So it hit a chord with a lot of people. And only for the fact is they do have so many people like the book I wrote about. It's really surprising.
It is a scary. But the character that was very interesting, and I'm surprised that nobody really questioned her too much, was Gladys. Every time he turned around, I mean, I know people like that, and I know that, I know people, my sister-in-law in Florida lives in a neighborhood like this, to be very honest. And you have to have, you know, in a party, and everybody has to be invited, and blah, blah, blah. And she has her book, and she writes down her important parts and everything. I go, oh, have a good time. I have better things to do. So Gladys writes everything down, and nobody knows what she's writing, but nobody ever questions her. How come? I mean, I'd be curious to know, like, you're sitting outside, what are you writing? I mean, I know what she's writing, but
well,
they don't know what she wrote.
Interestingly enough, nobody finds out until the very end.
Yeah,
but
I know.
Gladys,
that was really a, yeah, I know.
And it surprised you, didn't it?
I wasn't
sure. She was doing
sure.
something.
Yeah, I knew she was doing something that wasn't, you know, whatever. But I wasn't sure exactly what she, I knew she was doing something, that she was going to do something with those notes. I go like, oh my God, nobody stopped her. Nobody even cared. They just, she just kept writing.
Well, they did care, though. They
care, but they didn't know.
Faster than the internet.
Yeah.
She annoyed people. So
I know.
In my quest for surveying people, I found out there was always church-going people like Daryl and Marie Levine in the book, and then the kind and generous. They're kind and generous to everybody. And then there's the couple, the Sabines, Kateri and Giancarlo, and he's great-looking, she's great-looking, and then we find out there's felons in the book. So here we go. In a relatively short amount of time for Gretchen, she finds out there's all these different sorts of people. And when she found out there were felons, oh my gosh, she didn't know what to do. But that the time that she found out there were felons is when she spied Gladys running past her window with the binoculars and the clipboard. And Gladys was the one that was always somewhere in the neighborhood writing something down and watching. She was, we all have that one neighbor that sits down with their lawn chair or stands in their driveway and watches. And sometimes that person could be standing in a window looking down at the street and just watching. I'm always surprised when I talk to people since my neighborhood book came out that they say, oh, we have a Gladys in my neighborhood. People all say they have a Gladys, somebody that watches and is on high alert. And I made it clear in the book that Gladys was somebody to reckon with, but nobody dared ask her. They thought it was kind of comical and thought she was eccentric, correct? So
yeah, well, we knew she wasn't.
No, she was up to something. So there was an ulterior motive. Yes, definitely. But it was fun. The moment Gladys arrived, it was so fun for me. She changed my whole book from being, uh-oh, people are just going to be mad at one another, and one thing will reveal after another. She made it actually fun. So every day I didn't know if Gladys was going to show up, or when she did show up, I didn't know what she would be doing, how she would present herself, because she was a live wire in the story. Much to the neighbor's dismay, she's always precisely at the right time something is happening in the neighborhood. And so as the reader is reading along, they're always thinking, is Gladys going to show up, and what is she going to write down? And you saw within the book that there were actually a couple of attempts of trying to find out what was on the clipboard. It drove Gretchen nuts to watch her do that. She thought it was an invasion of her privacy.
Oh, I would too, definitely think.
Yeah.
An invasion of my privacy.
I
would keep my shades down and make sure she couldn't look in.
Right.
So,
yeah,
scary.
And so as the block starts evolving and we're getting to know these neighbors and we're doing things in the book that real neighbors would do, this block had progressive Christmas dinner parties. And that's when they found out the felons were really up to no good. You know, the people that I surveyed all responded back with degrees of felons in their neighborhood, to people that just they thought were felons, to people that actually had felons. And what was interesting with all the replies that I had to really write into the book, nobody really talked about it. They knew this was happening right before their eyes in their neighborhood, and they either, A, didn't want to acknowledge that in this nice neighborhood that could happen, B, that they didn't want to get to know them, so they kind of pretend they weren't there. So it's interesting how people engage or not engage, but either way, they're doing something that makes the person, like the felons, feel not wanted. So it's interesting. The block parties were hilarious. They got all dressed up for Christmas, and it just was a nice event. But then the felons stole something, and so it stopped the party. So it's really interesting how people react differently to their neighbors.
That's just true. So why did Maggie, this was really, I said I would never do that. She said that in order to be in contact with everyone, you had to tell everybody your phone number and contact information next of kin. It was almost as if she was going to collect the life insurance of everyone, too. She wanted to know everything about everyone. I would not tell anybody that. That's scary.
Well, so I don't know if in your near area you have a neighborhood watch. So
yeah,
I
they
put
do.
A neighborhood
they,
watch. And
they do, but that
so
would be the police
I
that
have,
do it here.
So for my research, I went to a neighborhood watch get-together.
Mm.
And believe it or not, they encourage people to give each other information, phone numbers, somebody else that can be contacted if something happens within the neighborhood. So I was really surprised they do that. So I incorporated all of that in the story. And, of course, in the story, you see she's not happy about this. She doesn't want to give their private phone number out to anybody. So you have all degrees of people. The ones that wanted all the information were the felons. They wanted everybody's information. They wanted to know the times that they were gone to work. They wanted to know everybody next of kin because they wanted to know how close they were. So there was ulterior motives to each one of the characters. It's interesting. I had no idea in books, and this is I'm writing my sixth novel now. I psychoanalyze my characters. It's very interesting what I find out.
You don't want to know how
I
analyze my characters.
It reads the true lies. But Maggie put herself in charge of the neighborhood watch for some reason. And from the survey, I found out that one family usually calls the police. They put up safety signs that children are playing or to slow down. And they sometimes take it even a step further, creating a list of unlisted phone numbers. And then I took it a step further into the neighborhood's private phone numbers next to kin to create more anxiety. Ultimately, Maggie wanted to know information for her own personal gain, but you would need to read that information to find out what she was dealing with. And then the felons, which we really don't have talking, only the mother, Lucille, they had reasons to want to know more also. So there's motive. But it takes everyone by surprise, and you actually feel sorry for Maggie, I think.
Yeah, you do, after a while.
After the story starts happening, you think she's the cheese, you know, the big cheese of the neighborhood. Come to find out she's very vulnerable. But then you have Gretchen and Jared, who love this neighborhood. It's just beautiful. And they're intrigued by the area. It's quaint. And then they one by one get to know these neighbors. And then they're questioning themselves at the end of every day. Oh my gosh, can you believe this is happening in the neighborhood? So my questions within my story questions to the readers ultimately starts compiling. Are they going to stay? Will they stay here? When the readers start thinking this is too nuts, it's too crazy, it's too unbelievable, and will they stay? So you find out what happens. But Maggie does seem to annoy Gretchen every day. And
yes,
she always
does,
seems pulled together. And she seems to thrive in compliments and needs affirmation all the time.
Mm-hmm.
She just seems to be very insecure about her position within the neighborhood. So Gretchen has Maggie's number, and she knows all about her. But then what is she going to do with this information? Pull back? I think you see Gretchen moving into this neighborhood, excited, really happy, getting to know everybody, and then she starts retreating. You can see how that easily would turn around. And then tell me, what would you do if you had the Stanley family who creates havoc and dangerous things in the neighborhood? Would you want to include them in the function? So then you've got the neighbors talking about the neighbors, hush, quietly, and they're going to do things to not invite certain people. And you've got the neighbors that want to be inclusive. But, you know, that was one of my questions I surveyed. If you do have a neighbor that you're not inclusive, how do you deal with them? And 9 times out of 10, the people said they just don't invite them. But many of them had a little thing on the underline, but if they found out, we would let them come. So there is that. So you still have the involvement of people, even though you know they're felons, whether or not to have them in your house or not. Sometimes they just show up because everybody's talking about the situation or the party that's going to happen. So it's very interesting. The police, we find out, are being called to the Stanley house, and everybody's upset about that. So when I surveyed, I asked the people, how do you react when the police come in? And there's a group of people that immediately come out and watch everything and hear everything. And then you have the other people in the neighborhood that are standing up in their windows looking down and just watching. And they kind of, they know they're going to hear from somebody.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. We have, the only thing that happens here once in a while, and we pray that it doesn't happen too often, is the fire alarm goes off. And everybody stands in the, they're supposed to go downstairs. Everybody stands in the hall saying, what do I do? I don't know what to do. So I text the super and I'll say, Morgan, is there something that I have to know about? Do I have to leave or is it not, or is it nothing? He'll answer me in 2 seconds. Don't worry about it. And then, of course, I walk around telling everybody, don't worry about it. It's fine. See, my phone says it's fine. My next door neighbor is the president of the co-op. So if I want to know something,
so you've got
I just,
a co-op.
Yeah, she knows everything. I try not to, I don't really want to know anybody's business. I really don't, you know, want to deal with that. The only people I really talk to are my two little friends next door, my little boys next door that I give books to when I get children's books, and they love me.
Wonderful.
They're two of the most brilliant little kids I've ever met, and the little five-year-old said to me, the nonfiction books you gave me are very informative. I said, what about them? And he started telling me about the book and the country. And I go like, sure, you're five. Okay, no problem. And the brother loved it too. And then the brother said, if you get basketball, that would be mine. I was cracking up, but they read. So this really bothers me because I've seen this happen.
Doesn't it?
In doctor's offices.
You can see everything happening. And it's to the people that think it's unbelievable. It's not.
It does happen.
So many things happening in people's lives, in their neighborhoods, right in front of them. And it's interesting. If you just observe, you'll see. You'll have a Gladys somewhere in your neighborhood. There's people doing things that you would not approve of. There's the people that are like Maggie that want to be in charge of, want to dress accordingly, have the latest everything.
She does.
This was real life. I was so surprised when that survey came back that we basically all live in the same neighborhood. It's really interesting. So what's really interesting is people can put themselves in my book to the point I had, do you want to hear something really funny? I had three neighbors. As soon as my book was released, my neighbors all went out and read it, and they got mad at me. They thought I wrote about them. And I said, oh, my gosh, who do you think you are? It was really funny. Nobody could tell me who they thought they were, but they thought the idea of the book was our neighbor. And I said, well, if you read the foreword, we all live in the same neighborhood. And it's not my neighborhood. But see, I touched on something that really provoked people. Oh, my gosh, this is crazy. This can happen. And we do have people like that in our neighborhood. And I wrote about it. So they were
You have to be careful. You have to write things. You have to write something like, this is you know, based on real life events, well, it's fiction. The story that I wrote about myself and my sister, are all true. Everything is 100% true. Of course, I made myself a different name and her a different name, and the publisher that wouldn't publish it said, "Well, you know, there are characters in the book." I said, "These are all real people," and I changed the names of a lot of people, and I said, "These are true stories that happened to me and my sister. My sister died 10 years ago, so I figured by keeping her alive, I would crack up the world." She read the first book. She helped me write it and corrected it and did whatever. But I said, you know what, this is fun. And there was true stories of stuff we did in my neighborhood together, and nobody would believe some of the crazy things that we used to do. That was a lot of fun.
Well, they really want fiction for some reason. I found that out with all the books that I've written.
That's what I wrote.
And
I said, this is fiction to fiction, but based on real life. So, yeah, they didn't believe I did some of the things. And my mother had Alzheimer's, so she saw the first book and cracked up laughing when she understood. But, I mean, just the fact that my mother sent me to go dancing school was horrible. So, Gretchen,
did you know I wrote a book about my mom who died of, she had, at the end of her life, she did lose her mind, and that
was
survival. And let me tell you, when you write something as you did and as I did from the heart, it really resonated with many people, many people. I like my way of writing. I write contemporary memoir style fiction. So what I like to do is make sure it is fiction, but I like to take something that I completely know in my heart and put that in the story, and it really draws the reader in and has them turning the pages. But it's interesting how my books have evolved. I don't know if you wanted me to get off subject matter of the neighborhood, but I did write one story that I had to fictionalize the names. Mm-hmm. I had to change the place. I had to change the time of life that it happened. And then I had to wait 25 years to tell that story because I had to wait for 7 people to serve their federal prison time. I was an informant for the FBI for 1.5 years when I worked in a bank, and I happened to walk into an embezzling situation. And it was in a blink of an eye, my life changed in 1 second. I found myself having to be completely involved with what I had to do, the right thing. And I couldn't walk away. It was one of the worst circumstances, situations. Uh-huh. But ultimately, I did the right thing. But here again, I had to make sure everything was fictionalized in order to protect the people that did the wrong thing. So that was an interesting story to write. Very interesting. But we all have stories, don't we, Fran?
I wrote my mom's story in her own words. And I used the names of the home health aides. They gave me permission. There was no problem. And it was a true story, and it's nonfiction. And it's called The Daughter's Promise. It's told in her voice and mine. And it tells the story from the moment she realized that her mind was gone to the moment that she died of Alzheimer's, of pneumonia, basically. You don't die of Alzheimer's. But anyway, this I found very interesting because I've seen this happen too. Dorothy worked in a doctor's office, and she had prescriptions and stuff like that. And the doctor told information about patients, and there's the HIPAA law, the privacy law. So I can't believe that, and she knew about everything. So when she lost her prescription because it was stolen, she yelled at her and made her feel bad, or she tried to anyway.
Yep. So it's interesting, the lines. So I brought in the story, I take you to different situations and how people, if they're trustworthy, well, you find out something about the integrity of Dorothy right then and there. So did Gretchen. Gretchen went, oh, no. But it was Dorothy's way of getting back and feeling like she was in control. And so every neighbor, as we get to know them, they all feel they have different levels of being in control of situations. And evidently they were at a party. I can't find the chapter. I have to go through the chapter, but there was a situation where Dorothy was telling information and the doctor was agreeing, which is so wrong.
Yeah.
So wrong. So, and this, you know what? Things like that happen, and it's not right. And it only takes one person to start doing the wrong thing, and other people fall in line sometimes. I don't condone it, but that was one of the questions. So in my survey, when I sent out, I had other questions that people wrote, and the doctor situation came up many times, and they all came back at me with HIPAA, and they said it didn't matter. They still had situations. So it was really interesting and eye-opening on so many levels. So I put that in the story. I wanted people to know that, hey, sometimes you have to really watch what you say to who you're saying it. Because if you know somebody's a blabbermouth, they might take it to the next level. And they can use it against you. And that's what I used in the book. It was against Dorothy's personal, how she was.
Mm-hmm.
It was an affront on her. People realized she was not trustworthy. But then you find out Dorothy is married to a hunter who takes off and goes hunting for weeks at a time and leaves her at home. And then I take you into Dorothy's house, and oh my gosh, they have every animal that Riley ever shot stuffed in the house. And so come to find out, Dorothy does not like hunting. You find this out gradually. She does not like the stuffed animals. She never wanted it, and it was supposed to stay in the garage. And it just went into her whole house, which completely rocked her world. And so her personal life showed up in her professional life with her acting out in different ways. So it was very interesting to find that out. But how would like to live in a trophy house? So I went to this one woman's house for my research, and she invited me to her home. And her husband's a hunter. He travels back east. He's gone for weeks at a time. He does the same thing, fishing season, duck, bear, deer. I mean, he's gone for these hunts all year round. He travels the world and leaves the wife at home. And she invited me up to see her house, and she burst out in tears. She goes, I didn't know when I married him that my house would look like this. And she says, we've been married for so long, it's just become matter of fact that he stuffs everything that he shoots. I was surprised. I've never seen a trophy house like that, ever. Have you?
No.
Have you
no,
seen
definitely not.
Somebody
no.
that stuffs everything? And then
no,
the
my family is.
The,
my family doesn't do stuff like that. No, nobody goes hunting. Uh-uh.
But there's hunters around you, right?
No, not in this neighborhood. Uh-uh. Not where I live.
Oh.
Not in the type of
well,
neighborhood where I live. And not where the police are on. I said, the only thing that happens here that they have to do something about is that people are crossing the street in the wrong way. And there have been like four or five, maybe six people that got serious accidents in the last couple of days. And it's because people are crossing the street, not by the crosswalk, or they're crossing against the light. And the other day we were riding, and there was a man whose body was in the street. And it was an 87-year-old man that he was a hit and run. They found him, the man. And he shouldn't be driving a car, but the guy shouldn't have been crossing the street the wrong way. and they did interview people on the neighborhood. That's the only bad thing that's been happening, is that people don't watch where they're going. So, and
yeah.
people are texting, they're texting while they're walking. And the other day I said
to this
young girl, I said, you're going to get hit by a car
issue.
If you don't look up while you're walking. They don't
that's
even care. But this, before
yeah,
we end, this is this. Yeah, it's scary. But this, and they're gonna, the police are gonna do something about it. They are more prevalent in this neighborhood. They are, and there's one people that you don't want to start with.
No, but it takes all kinds to be in the neighborhood for sure. And in the neighborhood, you find out this really nice little shopping mall, and that's where you meet Sandra in the book club.
I know.
And Sandra becomes important, and it's a very quaint little shopping area. And so who knew Gladys had motives and had a surprise twist in the story. And I don't want to ruin the plot for the reader that has not read it yet.
No, don't tell him.
But it's really eye-opening to find out what Gladys is doing with that clipboard. And even when Gretchen is at the bookstore talking to Sandra, Gladys shows up, and she's writing on that clipboard. So she became a thorn in Gretchen's side. She would always show up. There was always a secret about something, and that wasn't Gretchen didn't like that one bit. But
I wouldn't
the
like
reason
it either.
The police came often because those felons were doing things even outside of the neighborhood. So
yep,
I have something happen in front of the bookstore and in front of the hairdresser. So, and then you have the neighbors that get mad at another neighbor, and then they do something to tell them off. And do you know what Lucille does? She paints her house a horrible color.
That's what I have in my thing. She painted it chartreuse. Yes.
So she was trying to get back at people for belittling her sons, not including them for the parties. And it was her way to get back. And you know what? So when I was writing the book, I reached back out to my surveyed people, and I asked a couple of questions about how would you deal with somebody painting their house the wrong way. Oh, my gosh, Fran, this happens all the time. I had no idea. People, the neighbors will get together and offer money to repaint the house. And then if they take it and they repaint it another god-awful color, then the people are just, I'm sorry to use the word, screwed. I mean, so that happened multiple times in my surveys. I was really surprised that people take it to another level just to get back at people without saying anything. They don't have to say anything. That people have to live across the street from that for the rest of their lives, which brings me to another way that they got back was to bring the motorcycle people in. Noise. That noise is another thing that drives people crazy in the neighborhood. Certain times people want to go home, have it quiet. And then if you live next door to people that repair motorcycles and rev the engines. Oh, my gosh. So the survey people that I had really were invaluable to me writing this story and taking it to the next level. I heard what they said, and then I took it to the next level of probability that could happen. So did you feel like it was a page-turner that you wanted to find out what these neighbors were up to, Fran?
Well, I'm a speed reader, as everybody knows. So you're one of the lucky people, because either it's going to take me an hour and a half to read a whole book, or it's going to take me a couple of days. And if it takes me a couple of days, you're in trouble. It means that I don't really want to read the book, and I hate it, and I'm not going to – I never write any negative reviews, ever. But there are times, like, I have 20 books on my chair, and there's about 15 of them I would like to take and send back because I really don't like them. And some of them are really bad. I won't say which ones they are. And some of them, somebody wrote a book about an empress from the past. So I looked up the person, and the book is okay, but the information and the history is totally different. Basically, the outline of her story is right, but the characters, he might have made them up. He had to make them up because there's nothing about what this empress did that's in history. So I'm reading it, and I'm going, like, how am I going to make this interesting? Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm trying. But before we go, we have about 10 minutes. We have another couple.
But did you like the book?
In.
You have to tell me.
If I didn't like the book, I wouldn't do the interview, to be very honest. I have to be very honest.
Thank you.
If I didn't like the book, I wouldn't have agreed to do the interview, because I won't interview somebody when I hate the book. No. Uh-uh. Not me.
I'm glad you. But what was your – okay, when you read my book – thank you, Fran, for telling me that. What was it that you felt that you wanted to hear within the story when you found out it was a crazy neighborhood? Did you want Gretchen to move at the end? Did you want something else to happen?
Actually, I was surprised where you moved them, where they went at the end of the book. And I thought one of two things. A, she was going to tell Maggie, I'm taking over, and this is not going to happen. Or B, someone was going to put rules outside and have them outside and have posters and flyers and giving everybody, this is Monday, this is what you're going to do. Tuesday, this is what, I was ready for everyday menus. I was like, yeah, I could come up with this. I mean, yeah. I was ready for Jared to finally say to her, these people are out of their minds. Seriously.
Yeah.
And I was ready for somebody to
serious.
Say, okay, you know, these people have to go, and this has to go, and the gang, are they going to really, noise pollution? Okay, we're going to have a sign that the police have noise pollution. You can't have the motorcycle gang there either. So I was ready for something, and then I'm going to ask this question. You moved them wherever they are now. Are you going to write a sequel to this?
I left it open. There could be.
Yeah, I know.
And very possible that a few of the people in the neighborhood could move to their neighborhood. So
that's what I was thinking.
I left that open. I have not written a series, but this one was so funny, so interesting. Both were very interesting. I thought, well, this one I think I could do a sequel, and it would be different and fresh. And it would have to be a whole set of different situations. So I left that open, ended for myself. And I write all of my books are single books. They're not a series. But it's interesting. I'm finding everybody wants to start with my first one and move on from they do them and they read them in order. It's very interesting, the feedback. It's been wonderful feedback. I've been very fortunate to be able to connect with people on Facebook. You know, I've only been on Facebook book clubs for a year, so it's been almost exactly a year, and it's been so exciting. So much has happened. I took my books to all 50 states and to 4 different countries. So it's been really interesting and fun, and it's a lot of work, but I'm enjoying it so much. I don't know if you know this, but I just started writing when I was 57 years old. I didn't know I was a writer. So this has been so much fun for me to have this happen at this time of my life. So it's been eye-opening, just wonderful, let me just say that.
Well, I understand what you're saying. When my mom got sick in 2002, in 2003, I had to retire from teaching. I was the dean. I was up for assistant principal, and my mom got sick. And my sister had to deal with her own situations. And my brother has to deal with three kids that were going to college. Now he's got one and two that are working and doing very well. And, of course, guess who helped write the term papers? You're talking to her. I mean, I'm very close to my nephews and my nieces that I had to retire from teaching. And I'm saying, my sister said to me before she died, I'm thin. I weighed 200 pounds when my mother got sick because I was eating myself up into oblivion. And she said to me, either you're going to be a couch potato or why don't you write a book? I go like, what am I going to write about? What are you talking about? I said, to how about if I write about all the crazy things that we did growing up or the stuff that mom made us do that I didn't want to do. So, yeah, it took me a while to sit down and write it. And when I finally did write it, I cracked up laughing. And then she said, why did you write that? I go, because you sent for it. You asked me to write about it. So, yeah, you never know what you're going to do. Little did I know that I was going to have a radio show either that's syndicated. Somebody was read my book. My name is Bertha. And this lady emailed me and said, how would you like to read a chapter of your book on my radio show? I go, what are you talking about? And I did. I read it on her show, and she said, why don't you read another one, and why don't you write some poems and write them? I had no idea who this person was, but she was very, very, very nice. Finally, she gave me an hour on her network once a month to do my own show.
Wow.
And it took a while for me to get acclimated how I wanted to do it, because she said I needed people, like a couple of other people, to read the book of the author that I was interviewing. And the first interview that I did was Tess Gerritsen, who agreed to be on my radio show. I emailed her myself, but these people were asking questions, and I said, you know what, I can't have them asking too many questions because it was taking over. So I stopped on that network, and my friend put me on her network, and I had my own show once or twice a week until finally I got my own network, which works better because I could do whatever I want. And I could do the show every one a day, whenever I want, because they were giving me times, and sometimes I would say, well, this is my time. No, it's ours. So this way nobody could tell me anything. So before we go, let's see. Where am I on my page of 1,000 questions? Gretchen realizes that it's getting to her too much. And we have Maggie, and she wants to sue her neighbors and Riley, and she sues everybody. And poor Holly, she never knows what happened on that hunting trip. She'd be an interesting character, Holly, to bring back with Gretchen in the next neighborhood. So,
yes.
Where do we find out about you and your work, and what's the next book that's going to come out? We have about 3 minutes.
Oh, my gosh. I'm on chapter 8 of my next novel. I don't have a title just yet, but it's something about a country club at this point. There's going to be social media. There's going to be phones. There's going to be other social media outlets that are going to be talked about back and forth with the characters. It's starting out really funny, and it's starting to get a little bit serious. That book should be out this year. I've been taking my time writing this one to make sure I have it completely correct. I don't want to give anything away until I have the book halfway written, and then I'll be talking more about it. And I do have Erina Bridget Ring on Facebook author page and a personal page, and I have quite a following now. And I kind of keep people updated on my site with where I am with my writing. It's been so fun. Oh, my gosh. What an outlet writing is. And you can be as creative as you want. And it's so funny. And let me just say, the neighborhood, the book will have you laughing out loud. It is funny. It's eye-opening. It could be anybody's neighborhood. And I hope I brought that across to everybody that read it. And I hope you did laugh when you were reading it, too.
Were you laughing and you cry
you
a little bit?
And thank you for having me on. I really appreciate this.
No, I'm glad you came on. And everybody, it's freezing outside. No, seriously, it's really cold out here. It's cold, but we're a warm cold. The sun is shining. Amina, thank you so much. Everybody have a great day, and bye.
Thank you, Fran.